Our show. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm Bobby Elias. What a great song, Joan Baez. Very timely for what's going on these days. The 50th anniversary of JFK's death was yesterday. And we're going to be talking ending all wars today. The name of the show is Let's Create a Better World. We also talk a lot about healthy aging. We are into body, mind, spirit of all types, into exercise, dance, yoga, food. We're into a lot of different quality life and issues that are important. We're making this one of the best shows with cutting-edge guests and issues. Next week, we're going to be going into healthy aging at a deep note with Dr. Sarah Larson, who's a guest and co-host, and she's a really super all-around health person with many, many things to talk about as far as aging and how to avoid it, how to reverse it, etc. We also may have on Burton Goldberg. Dr. Burton Goldberg is 87 years old. He is the voice of alternative medicine. Today we're going to have a great show. Oh, yeah, one more thing here, a couple more things before I get into that. If you like our show, rate us on iTunes. You can also check our previous shows on the archives. And for those of you that aren't aware, you can hear this show and other shows on PRN by calling the number I'm going to give you, 619-550-0869. I have some announcements towards the end of the show, but the first half hour or so, I want to get mostly Blaise Von Payne, our guest today. We're going to be talking about ending all wars. There's a lot of excitement going on about new groups and coalitions forming and people that are tired of what's going on all over the world. And there's some big, big events coming up in this coming year, 2014. I have a background in anti-war going back to the latter stages of the Vietnam War. Many of us were in college and high school, and we developed a resist the draft campaign, did a lot of things which I'll talk about later. But let's get to our guest. Now, we're also going to talk about JFK and his involvement with the wars, where he stood on these. Our guest, welcome to Blaise Von Payne. Hi, Blaise.
Hi there, Bobby. How you doing?
I'm doing great. So wonderful to have you on again. You were on a few weeks ago. People really enjoyed what you had to say. But the reason I wanted you to come on today is because you had on the radio, I heard you talking about ending all wars and this new excitement of new people doing new things. Why don't you start out at the beginning and tell our listeners a little more about the beginning of all this and how it came about and so forth.
Well, many of the intellectuals and activists of the world are convinced that we absolutely cannot sustain this planet and sustain war, and they're absolutely correct. And that was basically the position of John Kennedy, and that was why he was eliminated in a military coup, and every president since that time has got the message that they will either conform to the military or they will be eliminated. Now, that's not a conspiracy theory at all. It's an induction from thousands of intellectuals. An induction is scientific thinking where you do case after case after case. We've had great historians deal with this, the late Howard Zinn. We had the recent work of Oliver Stone and Peter Kuznick in the Untold History of the United States. The point being that the nation state as the terminus of sovereignty is as outdated as the city states of old. The United States cannot fix the ocean. There's only one ocean. The United States cannot fix the air. There is only one entity known as air. We have to get beyond the idea that 4%, a nation representing 4% of the world's people, can dominate the other 94%. It's out of the question. It is impossible. We have failed in every effort since World War II, and we've been at war since World War II, uninterruptedly, losing in each case. This cannot continue. So great scholars and activists like David Swanson, David Hartsaw, George Lakey, Jen Passion, Mike Ferner, Colleen Kelly, Ruth Benn, Leah Bolger, Nathan Schneider, Hakim, Paul Chappell, Colin Archer, Kathy Kelly, and I would have to spend the rest of the time mentioning all the names, have said quite clearly, if unnecessary suffering on an enormous scale is to be avoided, we must abolish war. Some 180 million people died in the wars of the 20th century, and while we have not yet repeated a war on the scale of World War II, wars are not going away. Their enormous destruction continues, measured in terms of death, injuries, trauma, millions of people having to flee their homes, financial cost, environmental destruction, economic drain, the erosion of civil and political rights. If humanity is going to survive, we must abolish war. And I'm happy to be a member of a veterans organization, Veterans for Peace, which is dedicated to abolishing war. They're not kidding about it. They've been there. I had the Marine uniform on myself. We are going to abolish war. Now, we once abolished slavery, but if this were now 1850 and I were speaking to a crowd, not on radio, because we didn't have radio, in 1850, and I said, we're going to abolish slavery, someone would have said, you know, we can't do that. That is our economic system. That is how we function. It's very unfortunate. We're sorry for those poor people, but there's nothing we can do. Our attitude toward war right now is exactly the same as our attitude toward slavery. We have killed 3 million people in Vietnam. That's very unfortunate, but that is our economic system. We have killed people throughout the Americas by the millions. Very unfortunate, but that is our system. We have been at war in Iraq since 1991. I was there just prior to the bombs falling in January of 91. 88,000 tons of bombs on civilians. And who are the victims of war? All through the 20th century, all through the 21st century. The victims of war are innocent civilians and children. That is who are the victims. This cannot continue. Einstein told us we have to change the way we think. We think in 19th century terms or 18th century terms. We have to grow up. We have had these wars because people have become filthy rich on the wars. The first one to recognize that was Abe Lincoln. During the Civil War, he said, you know, something frightens me more than the war. And it's how many people are getting rich on giving us lousy weapons, lousy uniforms, shoddy equipment, terrible food, and they're getting rich. And they're getting rich under the flag. They're getting rich carrying the flag. Lincoln noticed that it got worse with every war. Now we hear the Dow is up. The Dow is up. Why? Well, there's more wars brewing. They were so excited when they thought we were going to bomb Syria that stocks went way up. War Street is Wall Street. And what can we do? There's a lot we can do. First of all production for military purposes has to be non-profit. That's how to do it. No profit whatsoever. A salary, yes. You get a salary in accord with your skills, just as in so many other institutions, and especially in government institutions where people work by the millions and are quite happy. They get a salary. They do not get a profit because it's the profit that creates the military industrial complex, which killed John Kennedy when he just had said, I am going to break the CIA into 1,000 pieces. He was the president. They were acting behind his back. He saved the Cuban people. They wanted to bomb them. They wanted to bomb the children. And he said, there are children there. And he refused to let the madman, absolute madman, General Curtis LeMay, who had massacred people throughout Korea, who wanted to bomb the devil out of the Cuban children. Kennedy said no, and that was his death moment. He spoke at American University in June 1963, and he said he was going to end the Cold War. He said he was going to end the conflict in Vietnam. He got together with Mr. Khrushchev after he had realized that they had come close to a nuclear war, and they were both terrified, and they both admitted it to each other, and they both admitted they had a military-industrial complex that they did not know whether they could control. They weren't sure they could control it. Khrushchev wasn't sure, and neither was Kennedy. And recently we've heard Obama say things like, well, I don't want to be a John F. Kennedy. I don't want to be a Martin Luther King. He knows the fact. Everybody knows what happened. Every president knows what happened. It's the same kind of thing we had when I lived in Guatemala. We had a constitutional de jure, that's by law, government. We had a de facto military dictatorship. Now, we're in the same situation. President Carter knew that. He said just a few days ago, we do not have a functional democracy. This is the former president, the greatest former president since John Quincy Adams, who went back to Congress after being president in order to work to end slavery. And war is slavery. Wars are fought by slaves. Once you join, you are talked to as a slave. Keep your mouth shut, follow orders, do what you're told. We tell you to kill someone, you kill them. If you do not do that, we can execute you. That is slavery. And that's how wars are fought. And that's what we wish to oppose. Everybody knows this. It's so clear. And that's why we have this document about ending war.
On that, Blake, let me let our listeners know that came in late. I'm Bobby Elias. This show is called Let's Create a Better World, and we're talking about that right now with Blake Von Payne, the director of Office of the Americas. He's got as you can hear and tell, and I'd like to know if anybody knows more about the history of all the wars in this country over the last 50 to 80 to 100 years, and even going back to the Civil War. Blake is a real historian and a real knowledgeable person, and I'm blessed to have him on this show. As we go along, you're doing great, Blake. I love everything you're saying, but don't forget we want to also, somewhere in there in the next 10 minutes or so, as you speak, if you could say something about this, the new things that are happening among the people that are getting together and wanting to make these big actions in 2014 and the organizing efforts and what we can do to organize and to as a team, as a world, how we can stop this massive debt destruction.
They have made it clear that there is a need and an opportunity for a campaign and a movement focused specifically on educating and organizing and developing momentum for the abolition of war. A great deal of organizing against particular wars, atrocities, weapons, tactics, and expenditures could benefit from the existence of an abolition campaign, becoming seen as the reasonable, in reasonable partial steps in the context of opposition to all war rather than simply violations of proper norms of war. Now, we've been through this many times. After World War I, there was the signing of the Kellogg-Briand Pact. That was major peace gatherings that took place in the late 1920s. This was in the wake of the establishment of the League of Nations and the Treaty of Versailles. But unfortunately, the Senate of the United States in 1920 refused to accept the Treaty of Versailles and the League of Nations, and that led immediately to World War II, which was a continuation of World War I, and entirely unnecessary. Had there been a League of Nations, there would have been no World War II. But instead of a League of Nations, we crushed Germany into the dust, starved them out, destroyed their economy, as we're trying to do to Iran today, and there was a craving of their people for someone to help them, and they went, as people do, for an absolute fanatic nut by the name of Adolf Hitler. He would not have been there if there had been a rational ending of that war. Instead of attacking the German people over again, we simply destroyed their economy. Now, that would not have happened had the League been in operation. So after the League failed, people got together here in this country and signed the Kellogg-Briand Pact, which was a pact to end war. It was called the end of war. Well, like many treaties, we have not accepted that. So these people now have designed this document to make it clear that this movement would work to coordinate with its members partial steps and movement-building victories toward abolition of war, including such approaches as economic conversion. Now, you must realize, under President Jimmy Carter in the 70s, we had meetings for peace conversion. I was at a meeting for peace conversion in the 1970s. And the idea was, how do you get Lockheed to stop simply making bombers and to make rapid transit instruments? And Lockheed was there. The Pentagon was there. The military was there. I was there. We talked for a full day. And finally, Lockheed said, well, we're accustomed to only having one customer on this matter of warfare. So they've made a fortune promoting war and promoting war industry. So that's why we conclude that all production of defense material should be nonprofit. And we could apply the same to healthcare. The Kaiser Corporation, which conducts 10% of the medical care in the state of California, is a nonprofit corporation. It's entirely possible to do that. And that takes the motive of theft out of the issue. By theft, I mean excessive profit, unregulated profit. That's what I'm talking about. The same could apply to education. The same could apply to so many areas in the country, to make much of the corporate work nonprofit, so that people who don't work are not the ones who are receiving the profits, and that the people who do work receive a salary, a decent salary, for what they are doing. So this is all part of the document. The movement would work with relevant members to develop direct action strategies, including vigils, blockades, demonstrations, with global coordination. This is not a national movement. This is an international movement. So we find people opposing militarism throughout the world. And with that, we oppose xenophobia, this mad worship of a state. The state becomes our God. We have the United States as Jesus. And what we do around the world is the will of God. This is a false religion. This is blasphemy. This is a lie. This is idol worship. We do not worship the state. We do not use racism against people. Most of our killing has been of people of color. We also are involved in machismo, extreme materialism, all forms of violence, lack of community, and also to end war profiteering. This has to happen. Dr. King made this so clear we can either have an end to war or an end to this planet. Do people realize what these nuclear weapons can do? Do they have any idea of how many accidents we've had? We could have easily blown up the world by now, and that includes the United States, just by nuclear accidents, which by accident didn't detonate. It happens constantly. Planes have gone down, ships have gone down, the nuclear weapons are in the ocean. Books have been written about it called Broken Arrows. How much longer can we make it that way? And now absolute mental idiots are trying to have a war against Iran. Who was it, Mr. Adelson the other day, who finances so many issues in our government? He pays to buy various Congress people. He suggested that we nuke Iran. Anyone who does that should be in prison. You're not allowed to threaten. A threat is a crime, and you don't threaten. You threaten one individual, you can be arrested. You're threatening millions of people in Iran and suggesting that go ahead. You should be arrested. This is not acceptable. So we are going, our objective is to abolish war, quite simply. If we haven't got the ability to change the way we think, we'll never do that, and it can be done. We know that many people will accept this. We know that our warrior president, Eisenhower, made it so clear that if people want peace so much, we ought to give it to them, he said. They said that every bomb that is made is a theft from the poor, and that's exactly what it is. So we are interested in resistance, including resistance to those who profit financially from wars. Such interests are not invincible. We mentioned previously that Raytheon's stock was soaring in the fall of this year as the White House planned to send missiles into Syria. The missiles that were not sent, but war abolition will require we defeat the propaganda of war promoters and countering the economic interest of war promoters with alternative economic possibilities. All of this can be done, but we must not be what Noam Chomsky has just called a nation of fear. And fear is the glue that holds together corrupt governance. His latest Absolutely. Article was stated, America is a terrified country.
Wow.
We were kept terrified for years by the fact that the Russians were coming. They weren't, and they didn't. And so fear is what paralyzes people. Now, as someone said recently, the only entity in government that cares about us common people is the NSA. They care very much about everything we're thinking, talking, doing. But as far as the Congress goes, they couldn't care less. They work for 0.1% of the people, and they're now at their lowest ebb of approval. Their approval couldn't be much lower. If it were in the classroom, it would be stated as an F-. So the people understand that they're not being represented. We can't carry on the charade that much longer. We have to get on with it. And this includes dealing not with killing children in Iraq and Iran and Pakistan and these horrible drones, which are a crime against humanity. Instead of that, we have to deal with the fact that the planet is heating up, that we have to work not as a nation, but as a planet to end the global disaster that is taking place. You can't do that and fight these stupid, miserable, sadistic, evil wars. These are evil. They are not to be continued. They are to be stopped. We have people around the world who work for reconciliation. We have recently a nun in Syria who's working for reconciliation. Just as Jesus was attacked, she is being attacked by those who just love war and make money on war and have their own stupid ideology of war. And so she is under attack. And a nonviolent person saying, let's talk. Let's talk. Let's have reconciliation. The same is taking place on the matter of Iran. We can't allow Mr. Netanyahu to wag the dog and to insist on a war. He does not know what he is talking about. He's talking about the elimination of his own country if he conducts the war he wants to conduct. This is suicide. It's time for us to wake up and stop the charade.
Blaise, you mentioned a minute or two ago about drones. Let me ask you a question, and then after that question, I'd like you to get into some of the events coming up next year, Sarvejo and others. But drones, here's the question. A lot of people in this country are worried because, well, not a lot of people, only a few people really know, and I'd like you to expound on the issue of drones coming to the United States and being used in this country. What's the story on that?
Well, they'll be used. They're already here. Police departments can use them. They can be as small as a bumblebee, if they have to be. Yes, they'll be used for law enforcement. As law enforcement becomes militarized more every day, as the police departments begin to look more like an army rather than a police department, the police are to be there to protect and to serve. They are not simply to be there to terrorize people. The number of police shootings has gone up recently. We have to stop that. And no, we don't want domestic drones except for humanitarian purposes without weapons. They can be used maybe for rescue. All technology has two possibilities. It can be used for good or evil. A huge airplane can be used to deliver a nuclear weapon to London or anywhere else, and that same plane can be used to deliver people from a typhoon, from a hurricane, from danger of any kind. So if the technology is without any compass, and what we need are human beings who have a compass. I mean, Einstein spoke about this. He said, you know, if the human condition, the human understanding, and the humanities are not in charge of technology, we will soon have a nation of idiots. You can't have technology run by people who are saying, oh, this is value-free. Nothing is value-free. We've tried to say the economy is value-free. No, it isn't. It is stacked. It is theft from the poor. The people who do the work do not receive what they should receive. So we have to bring values in. That's what John Kennedy was about, and that's why the people loved him so much. He talked values. He said, all right, you want to call me a man of peace at any price? You can do that. His nephew just wrote an extensive article in Rolling Stone about his uncle. This was Robert F. Kennedy Jr. writing for Rolling Stone right this week, and he recalls the fallen president's attempt to halt the war machine. He said on November 22, 1963, my uncle, President John F. Kennedy, went to Dallas intending to condemn the nonsense of the right-wing notion that peace is a sign of weakness. He meant to argue that the best way to demonstrate American strength was not by using destructive weapons and threats, but by being a nation that practices what it preaches about equal rights and social justice, striving toward peace instead of aggressive ambitions. This is Kennedy, and his greatest ambition as president was to break the militaristic ideology that has dominated our country since World War II. He told his friend, Ben Bradley, that he wanted the epitaph, "He kept the peace." And he said to William Walton, "I am almost a peace at any price president."
Wow, that's amazing. Tell us a bit about the events coming up, the worldwide organizing efforts going on in these huge events going on across the world, Sarajevo, and there's one other city that's preparing something next summer, is it?
Yeah, those things are in process of being developed. I haven't got things like a location. We can say there are major peace gatherings planned for Sarajevo in June and South Africa in July that this campaign will want to take part in. There's also the date of July 28th, 2014, marking the 100 years since the launch of the war that was to end all wars and instead brought more of them, a date that this campaign might want to make use of in some ways. Ask any scholar about what started World War I, and you'll get a different answer from each one. It was basically that we had made some new weapons, and people realized they could get profit from those weapons, and they wanted to use them. And they couldn't have given a damn about the poor young people that died by the hundreds of thousands, 10,000 a day sometimes, 20,000 a day, trench warfare, absolute insanity in the name of profit.
Really bad, Blaise. I wanted to talk to you about the organizing efforts, the people that are doing this. I know it's the early stages, and this sounds great about South Africa and what's going on in July and June. Let me say a couple things about you and your work. I know the Opposite Americas, you have a history in Latin America, and I know you're a historian of wars all over the world, and this is why I'd like to have you on every 3 weeks or so to give a report on this new thing that's going on right now, this new group, this new, call it a coalition, whatever you want to call it, people that want to end all wars.
Well, and they can go also, Bobby, they can certainly go to our website, which is quite simple. It's one word, Office of the Americas, that's with an S on America, officeoftheamericas.org, and they can always write their comments to us by writing to OOA@IGC.org. That's an email address. OOA@IGC.org. We've been working on these issues for many, many years, and we're very grateful to be able to work for peace. And we're finding that something is taking place, which is called in politics a realignment. Now, that is not a change of parties. We have two war parties, the Republican War Party and the Democratic War Party. So we're not talking about a change of parties, unless perhaps it would be a change to the Green Party. But a realignment is a new way of thinking. It's when people suddenly understand, look, I am being ripped off by the banks. They are stealing my money. They are stealing my house. They're being bailed out for stealing my house. I am not being bailed out for losing my house. People are becoming conscious. These wars are unnecessary. There was no need for a war in Iraq. There was no need for a war in Afghanistan. Afghanistan did not attack the United States. A small group of Saudi Arabians, possibly Saudi Arabians, in fact we think they were, attacked the United States. It was not a national action. It was a crime, a vicious crime against our people and should have been dealt with by police science, not by military. Police science, the nations of the world were saying, we'll help you find out who did it. And rather than asking the nations of the world to assist us to find out who is responsible for these horrible attacks on the Twin Towers and the Pentagon and the crashing of an airliner, instead of that, we started launching out at everybody and attacking one of the poorest countries in the world, Afghanistan. They had not attacked us. Some of the criminals might have been hiding there, and maybe they were hiding in Pakistan. We didn't know, so we attacked this poor country that really had no air force, had no army, had just defeated the Soviet Union, and now is defeating us as well. We do not win these wars. We lose them. It's time to realize this has to stop. We cannot continue the insanity.
Blake, I wanted to talk about the Vietnam War, which I got started in my youth. And you mentioned something about machismo. Let me just tell you that in the late 60s, there was a movement. Well, we all know the civil rights movement, the black movement, went in the 50s and the 60s. And there were a lot of people of color began to talk about how we were the people in the front getting killed. In 1969, a friend of mine spoke at UCLA. He was a student body president. He was a Chicano, a Latino. And he talked about the machismo factor and how too many young Latinos were going to the front lines and were proud Americans. They wanted to defend their country. And they would just go in droves. And we happened to win more gold, more Purple Heart, and more Congressional medals than any other race, period. The Latinos, especially the Mexican-Americans. Too much machismo. And I remember as a little child, I'd see these soldiers at a wedding party. Latinos had big wedding parties, and these guys would be so well dressed. Their pants were their shoes were shiny, and pants were ironed real well. They had the hats, and they looked so sharp. And the girls were going screaming. The girls just wanted to be around these men. And all these young kids would see this and say, "Well, I want to be like that."
Well, that's my wife and I marched in the Chicano Moratorium the day that Ruben Salazar was killed. We had a riot by the sheriffs in Los Angeles. My wife was 7 months pregnant at the time, and they literally charged and attacked the gathering in a very vicious way. We couldn't even get out of the area that evening. We had to stay right where we were until the following day. It was a terrible attack, and it was the Chicano moratorium, which we remember so well.
Yeah.
And it was precisely because the number of African-Americans and Latinos killed in Vietnam was far, far greater than their percentage in the population of the United States.
And but things are changing around the world. If you recall, in the beginning stages of the anti-war movements going back to the early part of the century, and especially in the 60s, was mostly a peace movement of white people, young people mostly, who are now people in their 60s more or less. But at that time, we began to see that as Latinos and as blacks. I got together with the gentleman who spoke, Rosalia Munoz, and we decided to start campaign against the war on behalf of the Latinos. We called it the Chicano Moratorium, and we called it the National Chicano Moratorium. I was heavily involved as the organizer of that. We had a lot of demonstrations all over the country, especially in the Southwest. And then on August the 28th, as you mentioned, I was in the stage. You know, the police, talk about police, they attacked us just because a few blocks away at a liquor store, they said somebody was trying to steal a beer or an orange juice. There's two different stories there. And
there were some children totally unaware of what was taking place. A few kids were throwing some rocks. And naturally, no one in the action was throwing rocks. But so that led to the charge on the whole operation. They were looking for any excuse to charge, to attack. And it was a terrible police riot. And we've had police riots various times in our country, and they are really not pretty to watch. It's an attack of the police on the people.
And, you know, Blaise, they had six school buses full of police, the sheriffs.
Yeah.
Sheriffs, because it was the county of L.A., they had called them sheriffs, but they're the same thing, police. And they were ready to attack. In fact, and talk about Ruben Salazar, the great newspaper man for the L.A. Times, the first real prominent Latino newspaper man. They didn't like him.
He was killed in the Silver Dollar Cafe. Yeah.
Right, he went walking. He came up to the stage and said hello to myself and Rosalio, and then he walked, and we noticed that there were two big Anglo gentlemen. They looked out of place. They were wearing kind of more formal clothes, and they were following him. They were following Sam Kushner and Ruben, and we just thought they're just following him. They're just undercover. We didn't think at all they were going to kill him, but they went. They had a police car. It was set up. They went up to the bar and opened the door and the window, and they had the guy that shot him, a guy named Frank Wilson, I think his name was, had a projectile. I think it was called exactly.
I believe.
Right. He used that, and he aimed it at Ruben's head, and he shot it.
That's enough to kill anyone.
It was on purpose, and yet we were all young people. We tried to fight it, and we couldn't get anywhere because the police and the law system and the judges were totally... For what they did, they had no way of wanting to give us any breaks. So
well, what I notice, Bobby, is that people are much more conscious today. In the past, when we marched in the '60s, we were the devil. Today, we are being received in a way that I am unaccustomed to. I am unaccustomed to people agreeing with me. I'm not used to that. But that's what's happening now. Ordinary people realize that they're being used, that the government does not care about them, that it cares about its own interests, which are not the same as the common good of the people of the United States or the rest of the globe. We are in a posture that is extremely dangerous to our own country. Dr. King made this so clear on April 4th, 1967, at the Riverside Church, a year to the day before he was murdered. He said that the greatest purveyor of violence on earth today is my country. That could never be more true now than it was then. It's true today. It was true then. And we still continue manufacturing all kinds of death. Fragmentation bombs, which children love to pick up those little tiny bomblets, and then they pick them up and they get their head blown off. And we refuse to outlaw those. And we refuse to outlaw landmines. My God, they're still going off from the Vietnam War, and in Cambodia, people are getting killed and maimed every day from landmines. This has to stop. The planet cannot continue with this insanity, this taking place of militarism, the worship of militarism, American exceptionalism. Whatever we do is right. We can have 20,000 nuclear weapons, but if you might be possibly thinking of making one, we will kill you. Well, the United States and Israel are the two most apt nations to use nuclear weapons. We don't argue about whether they have them. They do have them. They're very apt to use them, and they can create not global warming, but a nuclear winter, which will blot out any life on this earth.
Blaise, you mentioned, I want to say something on this, how people have changed. In this country, I've noticed the same thing, and I think I know why. Part of the reason is that the whole country is falling apart, as we all know, to the economy, the corporations, and the people are hitting rock bottom. Jobs, schools, everything, the killings, the police. And because of that, people are becoming aware, again, of what's really going on, as you said. So I think this is a prime time for this group that you're talking about, to end all wars, the abolition movement. I think that the time is here, and I want to stay in touch with you and call you the next few days to ask you more about the roots of this group and what's going to happen and how I can get involved, because I definitely want to have you on the radio show more often to talk about this and talk
Very
about
good.
The group.
You know, our president told us he was going to attack Syria. Our Secretary of State told us we were going to attack Syria, and the peace people of the world said, no, you're not. And the House of Commons in England, which supports every war possible that the Prime Minister might bring up, I don't think they've opposed a war in 200 years, they said, no, you're not. The message to Obama and to his former peacenik, Secretary of State Kerry, was, no, you're not going to have a war. You're not going to have it. That was a great victory. Now, we know that he could announce a nuclear attack tomorrow. This is the problem, that our wars are announced to us. People have nothing to say about them. They are announced after some lie, as David Swanson, who was on my program yesterday, wrote the book, War is a Lie. Wars are started by lies, continued by a second group of lies, and ended by a third group of lies. That's what wars have been. That's what they are. Wars are nothing more than murder, torture, hatred, racism, all put together. And we don't need it, and the planet doesn't need it anymore. And anyone who says to us, you can't stop war, they are really the ones who are in denial. The realists of the world, those who look at reality, are saying, you stop the wars or the planet will stop. It will stop all life, and it will look like Mars. So we're on our last strike here, and we have to make this work. The time's up.
And Blaise, this is exactly why what you and the people that are involved in this new movement is so critical right now. And I think this is a huge, huge thing that can really do something. It sounds organized from what I've heard you talk about when I heard you speak first about this on radio a few weeks ago. This is really, really incredible. We got to wind this up pretty soon. Why don't you give us your final thoughts in about a minute or two, Blaise, if you could, please?
Well, I'm just really happy to be with you today, and I do have a regular program called World Focus on Pacifica Radio, which emanates out of Los Angeles on KPFK, and the website is kpfk.org, and we also have our own website, officeoftheamericas.org, that's one word, and it's plural. Office of the Americas with an S on the end of it. We have a email of OOA at IGC. That's I as in Island, G as in George, C as in Cat, .org, where we people can send comments, and we're happy to do that, and we're very pleased with this realignment that's taking place in the United States at this time.
Wow, this sounds great. We were speaking to Blaise Montaigne. He is the director of Office of the Americas, and we will have him on again in approximately 3 weeks. You'll hear about this on the promos that you hear on Progressive Radio Network, the fastest-growing station in the world. Blaise, this has been wonderful. I want to be in touch with you. I'd love to help and support these efforts to this worldwide movement. Thank you so much for coming on, and appreciate it.
Thank you, Bobby. So long now.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
What a wonderful show this has been with Blaise Montaigne. We're not finished with the show yet. I have a couple things to talk about health and about some upcoming events and the next few shows. First of all, we're having a Gary Noem meeting. We have a group that I run here in Los Angeles called the Gary Noem Health Support Group. We're having a meeting today at 2 p.m. Pacific time at next to Venice High School. If anybody wants information on it, they can call me. It's about organic farming. It's about let's make our own food. Let's grow our own food. And we're going to have a tour of this is a wonderful place. David King is going to speak. He's a master gardener and the gentleman that runs the Learning Garden. He's also the founding chair of Seeds Library of Los Angeles. And he's very close with Dr. Vandana Shiva. She is in India, and many of us consider her the number one person in the world when it comes to seeds, saving our seeds, growing food organically, and doing things for the rest of the world. So we're excited about that. So call me at 323 if you want to get the information on this meeting today, or if any of you want to just give me input on the show, your ideas, thoughts, and ideas of other shows that are guests, please call me. My name is Bobby Elias, and my phone number, 323-770-1925. Next week, we're going to have Dr. Sarah Larson come on the show. She has been not only a guest, but also a co-host at times with Let's Create a Better World. She and I are looking forward to hopefully doing more work on healthy aging, health in general, which means everything. It means exercise, dance, yoga, meditation, the right foods, organic foods, vegan lifestyles, vegetarian, raw food. Covers a lot of things, positive thinking, great being grateful. So we're going to have a great show next week on this show. And if you like our show, be sure to give us a boost on the archives. Now, before we finish up, I've got two things here, one on B12 and another one on reverse aging. I'd like to bring this out to you. B12 is something that we think is very, very important. There's a new Tufts University Farmington study that reveals that 40% of people between the ages of 26 and 80 have low levels of B12. B12 is very important. It protects the brain, nervous system, and boosts immunity. It regulates mood and sleep cycles. Very much critical for energy production. I'm advising you as a health, I am a healer and a nutritionist, and I am advising you to get B12. I personally go to Tijuana, Mexico, and get little vials, and I use them with injections. I can bring them across the country because I buy them there, and I give myself injections of B12, which is even better. But there are liquids. There are some that are good. We'll help you get more information on that as we go along in our aging, in our talks about health and aging. B12 is really good to produce DNA and red blood cells. Recent research reveals that B12 can slow age-related memory, and that's a huge problem in this country, as many, many of you know. So that's my take on B12. Now, reverse aging. There's a lot of things going on with aging. People today at 70 and above, there are more and more people. Let me go back to 50 years old. Every 7 seconds, someone turns 50 in this country. When you talk about the world, it's even more there. In the world, it's all over the place. People are living longer, and they're going to continue to live longer. Yes, there's a lot of people that are young people that are heading towards the wrong side of the health pendulum because they're not eating right. There's too much junk food in the schools and things, but there are people that are eating well. There are more centenarians. There's more people in their 90s, 80s, and 70s than ever before in this country, ever before. 50 years ago, people thought anybody 50 or 60 was old. Not anymore. Today, 60 is what used to be 45. Things have changed immensely, and we're going to be talking about that on our show. So as I'm winding down the show, we're going to finish up with a song, We Are the World. I want you to hear that song as much as Melissa, our engineer, can do on that show, that we would much appreciate. Now, next week, Dr. Sarah and I will talk. We may also have on Dr. Burton Goldberg. He is, many people consider him the father of the aging, of the father of, alternative medicine. He says he's the voice of alternative medicine. He wants to be called that instead. He did start the first school on alternative medicine. And this was way back. And he's still going. He's still going strong. He's 87 years old. He was on our show a few weeks ago, and he'll be on again possibly in the next week or two. This coming week, Dr. Sarah and I will be on to talk about aging, and we're going to try to get him on also. So be sure to hear that show. Don't forget, rate us on iTunes. We're on every single Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time. You can check us on the archives. The name of the show is Let's Create a Better World. We're also bidding to get a new show on aging. Gary Noel wants to have a show on aging, and we want to have it ourselves. So, again, let me give you my phone number, 323-770-1925. We're going to be talking about a lot of things in the next few weeks, about cell phone radiation, about erectile dysfunction, about many, many issues on health, and we'll be having on our gentleman that was on today, Blaise Fontaine. All right, we're going to wind the show up. I want to thank our engineer, Melissa. I want to thank the producer in New York, Jason, our producer in Los Angeles, Jimmy Dean. Our guest today was Blaise Fontaine, and we're going to sign off and hope you come on next week. And Melissa, if you're here listening to this, our engineer, thank you for a wonderful job. And if you could play We Are the World as much as possible as we wind out. Thank you so much. We shall see you next week.
There comes a time when we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying. Oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all. We can't go on pretending day by day that someone somewhere will soon make a change. We all are part of God's great big family, and the truth, you know, love is all we need. Then a helping hand.